5 o'clock somewhere, and the world may be dark, but the truth must be seen. And you're listening to a special edition of The Aftermath.
Diego the Tortoise, over 100 years old, responsible for 40% of the 2000 Espanola Island turtles. Ozzy Osbourne, the Antichrist, or does he, strangely enough, have many attributes to those of the Lord Savior Jesus? Will metal enthusiasts propel Ozzy into a prophet-type legacy that will lead the followers of metal into future millennia, or possibly beyond this world? Cereal, love it or hate it, everyone has their favorite tasting. But which brand will be champion of the 2020 Sweet 16 cereal bracket? Submarine vehicles, will they pave the way into the unknown of our massive oceans? And will societies be built deep below our seas? Is this the next chapter of human exploration? And what will these new civilizations look like? And we travel into the past to discuss vagabonds, met a decade ago in the summer of 2010 while I was researching modern European charlatans. 10 years later, where are they now? What's your guess? We asked the fly in Hawaiian what he thinks, dead or alive.
You're listening to the home of the brave and the land of the free. This is The Aftermath.
I took a trip on a Gemini spacecraft, and I thought about you. I passed through the shadow of Jupiter, thought about you. I shot my space gun, boy, really felt blue. Two or three flying saucers parked under the stars, winding screen. Moon shining down in some little town, with each beam, the same old dream. I took a trip in a Gemini spacecraft, and I thought about you. Oh, I shot my space gun. All about you. Pull down my sun visor, boy, I really felt blue. Jumped into your Gemini, jumped into mine. We'll orbit the moon for just one time. Tomorrow night, tomorrow night. Ooh. Hold hands with me under the moonlight. Took a trip on a Gemini spacecraft, and I thought about you. I shot my space gun. I took a walk in space, boy, I really felt blue. Well, I peep through the crack, look way back, stardust trail leading back to you. What did I do? What could I do? Yes, what did I do? I thought about you. took a trip in the Gemini spacecraft. It's all about you.
Alrighty, Flying Hawaiian. You know what I've been thinking about? I don't know if I was dreaming or if I saw it on PBS. Nowadays, they have this submarine vehicle that can pull up right to a dock and, you know, a hatch opens and you sit in a seat. It looks like, you know, a fighter jet seat or something. But, I mean, these things are only the size of, like, maybe a Sea-Doo, but it has some wings and little propellers on the wings, like a miniature little plane. It's not that expensive either. I'm saying I could see once like Ford or something or Polaris started really manufacturing these things, they could be down to maybe $40,000 to $50,000 within the next, say, 5 years or so. They would be this type of mobile underwater exploration like vehicle that could just go maybe up to 200 miles or so underwater, up and down, dive pretty deep, withstand all the pressure. And once these vehicles like really start being developed by companies like BRP, it's gonna be like the new snowmobile. I mean, Can-Am and stuff's gonna be coming out with, like, you know, Yamaha and Hyundai is like these just vehicles that come up the dock and you hop in and you can cruise around and it's like, you know, no gravity, and it'd be amazing just to explore underneath the sea surface and find out what's really down there. And I feel like once these vehicles are in every household of people that live on the coast and stuff, and there's, you know, these refueling stations just right out on the piers, and people are going out there to maybe get food. And as the more we go deeper and start making refueling stations farther beneath the surface, these hubs are going to make us be able to create these new societies underwater. And I feel like it's a more viable solution to our problems with these limits to growth on the world, limits to our population as we reach 8 billion people, that it makes more sense to go deeper into the oceans to create these new societies in a pressurized bubble made of some type of glass or something, where dormitories are built. And I think the societies that would develop there would be a lot more communistic, because it's hard to be free once you are in a limited space like you would be in some type of dome society underwater. But, you know, nowadays, as the Earth gets smaller and smaller, as populations grow, I think the next step before more space exploration, where a lot of people always think to put the focus on where the human race will go, I think it'd be easier just to dive down into the ocean and use these new submarine vehicles that are going to be cheap here coming up once these companies start really pumping out these underwater vehicles. I would give it maybe 20 years once the everyday man could go take his boat down to the dock and start cruising underwater, that gas stations and stuff will start popping up underwater. And I think we could be a couple hundred miles out and see cities being built for, you know, a relatively affordable price out at sea. I give it 20 years.
20 years? Well, maybe, you know, I think we can see our technology is really accelerating in some aspects. You know, I do find this interesting. You know, space exploration, the idea of you know, colonizing space, I think, kind of takes up most of the human imagination, human consciousness. But I think people look around and see what's probably the more realistic option in the short time, then yeah, I think, you know, trying to move into the oceans, move underneath the sea, setting up there is probably a lot more feasible. I mean, most of our resources and are already here on Earth. So, I mean, it's going to be easier to build a bubble structure, some kind of habitat contained, you know, a couple hundred miles off the coast and down on the seafloor than mm-hmm. it is than taking all that material, blasting it into space, getting it to Mars, building the bubble on Mars. And you're really going to have the same amount of dangers. I mean, the bubble is compromised on Mars. You're completely screwed. It's just, you know, that's kind of it. You know, underwater, yeah, you're kind of in the same
boat. Somebody's going to come rescue you, you know? Yeah. It's like be like the new fire department. Like people on land, you know, just hop in their submarines and come save you if the bubble bursts. I mean, it's not like you can't just like come visit land again. It's just you would choose, like, you know, instead of buying a $200,000 home on land as the housing market increases, it's like maybe there's a nice little apartment underwater just like, you know, a couple miles out. And, you know, there's plenty of places to work within the dome that it's like, yeah, maybe you visit back land at land and go shop around or something for some necessities while you take, you know, your vehicle. Maybe you got to come back daily. I mean, you could, these things could be about the size as a regular car. And these villages underwater could just be 20 miles out. I mean, it could be a quick trip. These things go like 40 miles per hour underwater, wow, up and down. And I mean, I'm sure once technology keeps on going or people put more of a focus on developing these underwater vehicles, I mean, it can't be that difficult. Like if you just put more focus on designing things for underwater, and as opposed to always looking for rocket propulsion up, fighting gravity, I think it would be wise to use technology underwater. I think there's other types of energy, like the booming hydrogen cells technology as opposed to lithium batteries and stuff that could really be used. I mean, light up underwater too. Like, why don't we see more lights underwater to see really what's going on down there? I mean, how deep is the deepest part of the ocean? What is that fault line? The
Mariana Trench?
The deepest... Yeah, the Mariana Trench. I mean, what if that was the new Paris or something? Like, you know, maybe we could make an airport out where that trench is and have some planes that fly you out there. And then from there, you just dive on down and see how deep we can go and to building our species up in different places on Earth. Like, I mean, the Earth is, you just think of it as where we are on land. It's just as flat. We can't go up or down. But once you get into the ocean, you're up, down, all over the place. The volume underwater is so much greater than the land surface. Like the land surface, you just can go left or right. But once you're underwater, the volume is so much greater, and you don't have to necessarily always be fighting against gravity pulling you down, because you know, gravity works different underwater.
Does it though? Are you sure that it works differently underwater?
If you have air in your lungs, you suspend in water. You only sink it when
you let your air out.
Your lungs are depleted of air. So you can float on water as long as you have air in your lungs.
That's true. So I guess really the only thing holding us back is just being able to have the materials to withstand the pressure of, the deeper parts of the ocean, which I think we're moving in that direction. We can have some pretty strong materials that can support that. Now, you said that you thought that an early underwater civilization would be more communistic. Why do you think that is?
Because of the limit of resources, once you go farther out, you're going to have to manage your resources of how much the village gets and has according to the capabilities of getting resources from land and how many resources the society is gathering, like themselves underwater. I mean, you're going to have a lot of food if everybody likes eating seafood. That's kind of taken care of. But maybe when it comes to certain fabrics, I mean, there would have to be this whole revolution of like making certain things underwater. But I don't know if you could really find a way to make something like silk or something. Like, what are your bed sheets going to be made out of underwater? I mean, are you still going to get the cotton from land and bring it down there? So depending on that city and how they're going back and forth the land, like what type of submarine vehicles they have is how much they're going to be able to carry. So once those resources are limited, that's why I would turn more towards the communistic forms of political structure.
That's right. No one's going to be laughing your underwater basket weaving degree when you're down there. You're going to be set.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Like, don't you think that there's going to be like, this is all going to be like sponsored by McDonald's? Like, don't you want to be the first one to go down and get your underwater McDonald's Big Mac?
Yeah, but how many hamburgers can they get down there? Is there just going to be one big town that, like, we were talking about in the Mariana Trench and, like, have a giant city in one spot? Or is this more of, like, you know, every beach in Florida has its own mall that you kind of go out to, and maybe there's a little fun zone there sponsored by Chuck E. Cheese or something? You know, it's something to think about.
Yeah, do you envision like one like super giant bubble, or is it like a bunch of like little bubbles, like kind of connected with like
some type of transportation,
with like how you would have like a gerbil kind of setup going in with like all kinds of tubes and stuff that lead to each different bubble?
That'd be nice if we had like a whole coastline of like tunnels of like some type of subway system, like that went underwater and connected each city around the entire United States. Would be nice. And then just like each, think of how fast once you hit a tube from Boston to Myrtle Beach, like once you have that tube built, you could just shoot that subway through that tube, like just like when you go to the bank and you shoot the thing through the vacuum tube. Yeah. To think if you just had a little train system all around the coast, and then you just drop into your little city underwater, and you can go to Myrtle Beach and ride the Ferris wheel if you want to go to land, but you got to rent your little submarine vehicle that goes 40 miles per hour, and it's like $30 just to get back to shore. And you just have like a little, you know, gadget that says which way is east, west, and north and south, and however much per hour for 60 minutes or so. Be a nice way to bring back tourism to the States, you know?
Yeah, I like it. I'd do that. I'd ride that in a second.
Mm-hmm. Especially if it was got super fast and you could go from New York to Florida in like 45 minutes or something. That'd be nice.
Yeah, New York to Florida in 45 minutes, and then Florida or the Mariana Trench city in 45 minutes. That'd be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Would we have the tubes go? Would they go underwater too? Like, would you have the tube that could take you from, or would you still want to like be able to take the underwater Sea-Doo vehicle thing and kind of go. You have the option. You can either kind of take the subway tube down or just kind of ride your little underwater vehicle.
Well, it's like once you get to the main, say it's the mall village, once you're there, there is a subway to the mall off of Myrtle Beach. Like, you know, you can take your little transit system or you could freelance and drive, because there's going to be multiple pods like in between. If you say once the civilization is created, like your pod is going to be, say you got $90,000, all you need is like, it's like a beach ball and it's outside of the mall and it's not within that same mall pod. It's just like your house is a beach ball floating out in the ocean. And it's like, hey, I want to go hang out with Zachary Dackery, the Flying Hawaiian. My beach ball pod is maybe a mile away on Glendale Avenue or something. And I'm going to drop into my submarine vehicle and leave my place, my beach ball little pod, and go down Glendale Avenue and however we navigate and get on, you know, Eastern Avenue where you're chilling and you're living, and I'm just docking into your place. So you more use your vehicles to like freely go within to other people's properties that they're buying up throughout the ocean. But your big main central Myrtle Beach underground city where you have like maybe some amusement track attractions and stuff, like there is a subway transit to that, and then from there you would take your other, you know, there would be like the Union Terminal where you would get to the Mariana Trench, or if you want to go up to New York, or maybe you want to space out and go over to Europe, and just like that's just going to cost a little more to hop on that transit. But I mean, at the end of the day, it'd be safer than flying planes too. Cause like flying is like, it's just pretty messed up, you know, like to take all that risk, to like go way up in the sky, and planes are crashing all the time. That one just crashed in India. It's like, they're not as safe as if you just had this vacuum tube that was just like, I mean, you just got to have a lot of plastic, you know, get the PVC companies just like to really come together. And like as oil, as we still have this amount of oil on the planet, maybe we should stop using it as like auto emissions and like just be like, all right, we got to save this much oil so we can make this much PVC pipe so we can go make these tubes that connect all this, you know, around the country. And once those tubes are all airtight, you'd be able to ship a shuttle pretty quickly just through those tubes.
Man, what a future. I can't wait.
Wow. We never cease to surprise me. All the shit we come up with at the aftermath. All this talk of deep sea civilization reminds me of a song, Oceans. I'm feeling all existential. I'm sensing that hippie itch, Dackery, you know?
Yeah.
It's fucking kumbaya, man. Everyone in the studio. All together now. Grab those congas, Zach.
We are recording.
Mary, here's some egg shakers. One, two, three, four.
Hold on to the thread. The currents will shift. Guide me towards you. Know something's left. And we're all allowed to dream of the next. Oh,
The ocean's away, waves roll in my thoughts. Hold tight the ring, the sea will rise. Please stand by the shore.
Thank you very much.
Far out, man.
Good work, guys. Nice job on those congas, Zach. Mary, you shook the hell out of them.
Why you? I was defeating you.
through time, like Tubman and John Henry, but the time was wrong. Illegal aliens moan, it's such a pity that the city's just a danger zone. Atomic blues, bombing hawks, like Iraqis in Babylon. In the door control will take your soul and raid it for raid it, slay it. You hate it and debate it, but you don't get caught. An outlaw, outrunning the law.
September 15, 1835, the HMS Beagle dropped anchor off the coast of San Cristobal, the easternmost island in the Galapagos archipelago. It was on those black rocky shores that British naturalist Charles Darwin would begin cataloging a collection of wildlife unlike anywhere else on the planet, which would inspire his later writings and serve as the foundation for his theory of natural selection. Much of the fauna Darwin encountered are well known to us today. Emblyrhynchus cristatus, more commonly known as the Galapagos marine iguana, Sula nabuxi, known as the blue-footed booby, and of course, Testudine chelonoidis, known today as the giant tortoise, for whom the Galapagos island chain gets its name. The largest living species of tortoise. These magnificent creatures can grow in excess of 415 kilograms and can live for well over 100 years, with one notable specimen living to the age of 170. But like all creatures, despite the remoteness and genial disposition, the giant land tortoise has been a victim of man's perfidy and myopia. From a population believed to have once numbered around 250,000 in the 16th century, by the 1970s, only around 3,000 remained, caused by centuries of human overexploitation, habitat destruction, and invasive non-native species to the islands. Of the original 15 species of giant tortoise, only 10 remain. One such species holding on from the brink is Chelonoidis hoodensis, or Hood Island tortoises. By 1976, only 15 members of this species remained. Researchers at the Charles Darwin Research Station at Puerto Ayora on the Santa Cruz Island instituted a captive breeding program to attempt to save the species. Of the 15 tortoises, 12 were female and 3 were male. But of the 3 males on hand, only 2 were suitable for breeding. Prospects of this species' survival was looking grim, but some 4,600 kilometers away, hope for this beleaguered population lay hidden in plain sight. Hatched on Española Island in the 1910s, the hero of our story was brought to the United States in the early 20th century, where he was exhibited at zoos as a specimen of the giant tortoise of the Galapagos, although his exact species was then unknown. By the 1940s, he had settled in for permanent residency at the San Diego Zoo, and it was from this menagerie that he would receive his namesake. Diego, the giant tortoise, was found to be the missing link that the researchers at the Charles Darwin Research Station needed. Over the course of the 44-year program, Diego fathered over 900 offspring, accounting for approximately 40% of all Hood Island tortoises alive today. This past spring, after an extraordinary journey that brought him from humble beginnings in the South Pacific to the big time in America and back again to be a father for his species, Diego was released back into the wilds of Española Island to live out his days in well-earned retirement. We raise our glasses and tip our hats to you, Diego, a hero and inspiration for all times.
Wow, just amazing. Diego, the tortoise, saving an entire species.
What a legend, Ed. Like, seriously, it gives me chills just thinking about it.
Yeah. And, I mean, think of how much the world has changed since the 16th century when there was a population of 200,000 tortoise. Like, who killed all those tortoise? Is that what the pirates and stuff were doing down in the Caribbean and South America and Ecuador when the Spaniards first landed? Like, just the genocide of tortoises?
Yeah, you know, that definitely was part of it. You know, famously, these giant tortoises are supposed to be, like, really, like, delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they taste really good. You know, it's kind of like how, like, the buffalo.
Yeah.
There were such huge numbers. And, like, when...
And they were giant.
You know, British settlers would just go out there with, like, with muskets and just massacre them. Because, you know, they weren't necessarily that used to human contact.
Mm-hmm.
To the extent that they were going out there. But then you also got to think about the other factors. So as more humans began to travel to the Galapagos, and they're bringing outside species, because, you know, it's such a controlled ecosystem. Mm-hmm. That just a little bit of foreign species are going to completely upset it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, rats in particular were really, really hard on the tortoise population because they had just swarmed the turtle's nest and eat all the eggs.
Oh, they're just eating the eggs?
They're eating the babies.
Would rats ever, like, just eat a full-grown tortoise? Because it's just so slow, it just couldn't get away from, like, a just sea of rats.
No. It wasn't like that. It was just that they would, you know, the tortoise didn't really have any other, like, major predators on the island like that. You know, the species of the Galapagos are just so remote and isolated and specialized for that environment.
Can you hard boil, like, a tortoise egg and it kind of, like, be like a chicken egg? Like, if you hard-boiled it, or what type of texture do you think it would be?
I think that's probably possible. I don't know. I'm not sure if reptile eggs and, like, avian-type eggs are all that different. But I'm sure, like, you know, at the earliest stages, like a freshly laid giant tortoise egg, you could probably hard-boil it.
Mm-hmm. Be a different type of shell, though. I don't think it's as hard as a chicken shell.
Do you think you would eat an endangered species, like, to survive?
What type of survival scenario is it?
Like, okay, you're out in the desert. You have, like, you know, 60 miles to go, but you've already come, like, 200 miles. You're, like, sunburned. It's like night's coming. You have one more rest. Mm-hmm. And, like, you have to get just a little bit more energy to make it into town. Like, no one knows you're coming, but you're, like, that close. You just got to get a little more boost. And all you have is you can either kill and eat this giant whooping crane,
mm-hmm.
or you're not going to have enough energy to make it the rest of the journey, and you're going to die.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of a no-brainer, that you're gonna need that energy to get to the town, and you don't want to die. And if the crane's got to die, it's just got to die to get me there. But I think we should look at a different type of scenario than that necessarily. Like, because the reason you'd be eating the crane is because there still has to be one more or two more out there or something, I guess, even though it's an endangered species. I would say, like, what if there was a reality TV show or something of, like, the last of... Because I guess some species only have one more animal left, you know? What if there was an island with only that last endangered species, and then you put a human out there, and it's all the last of all these species, and then just one human, and then in that type of scenario, which endangered species would you survive off next, or would other ones of these species, you know, hunt the human and outlast the human? And, like, you know what I mean? Like, it would be like kind of like this test of, you know, the real survival of the fittest of the last of the endangered species, and then one human. And it could be like, you know, put that the Komodo dragon or something. Is that an endangered species? Like, could you take down one of those giant dragons that live on the beaches down in a similar region? Is the tortoise, like, how fast are these tortoises? Like, could they trample me or something if it was me and a tortoise on an island?
No, they're like a more peaceful type of tortoise. I mean, they are a very large, you know, like several hundred pounds. But they're not. Yeah, it's unlikely to trample you unless you let it. They are still tortoise. They do move pretty slow. I think you'd be safe. You know, they're not a predator. In that sense, you know, if it was like, I don't know, a snow leopard or something, like you on a mountainous island with a snow leopard. Yeah, that's probably more. That's more of a showdown that I think would give you some trouble. The Komodo dragon, I don't know how endangered they are per se, but I'm not fucking with the Komodo dragon. I'm not doing one
so
of those things.
I like the idea of that type of show. I wouldn't mind even being the first contestant on that show, because, you know, put me on an island with all those, with a thousand different endangered species, and just let's see what happens.
Okay, I'll revise my earlier proposal. Okay, instead of it's very similar to that scenario. You're in the desert. You have to make it. Would you eat the giant whooping crane for the energy to make it into town and survive, or you have even another choice? You can either eat the giant whooping crane to survive to make it to town, or you can eat like the equivalent amount of cockroaches to make it into town. Do you go with the presumably better tasting whooping crane to survive, make it to town, or do you eat the disgusting cockroaches and let the endangered whooping crane survive?
Yeah, there's just no way I'm eating cockroaches. I hate smashing cockroaches, and it's like on your shoe, and I could just never imagine that in my mouth, even if it's cooked. Like, sorry to say so, but sadly, it's true. I guess I would just eat the whooping crane instead of cockroaches.
There you go. That's okay. You know, save the teachers, pay the whales. So yeah, Diego. Diego is great, though. I was really excited about this story. You know, he has a well-deserved retirement. He has had more sex in his life than I think most people will. Fathered 40% of all of these giant hood tortoises alive today. Do you think the other tortoises in this captive breeding program don't get enough love? I mean, there's another tortoise there, E5, a pretty unimaginative name. You know, Diego gets the cool name because he's a world traveler and did all kinds of cool stuff. E5 was just born on this island, was just one of the last of his species. But this tortoise, E5, he, like, fathered, like, the other, like, 58% of these things.
Yeah.
There was a third tortoise. I'm going to do that. It just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Turtle, tortoise, we know the difference. It's just, turtle's just easier to say, don't you think? A tortoise. So it's harder. Turtle just rolls right off the tongue. So This other, the third unnamed male tortoise, he was like just really, he just didn't want to get it on. He was a real sad tortoise. But E5 was really good at fucking, man. He got a lot of these hood tortoises born.
Well, I'm not sure that he minds like not being recognized though. I mean, Diego, probably all the attention really just kind of always was startling him. I mean, like, there's no really reason for a turtle and human to ever be around each other. It's E5 kind of was maybe more the lucky one that didn't always have people taking pictures of him. I mean, I feel like Diego is like this Hollywood star, and even now he's being returned home, and it's like all the news channels are talking about Diego. And, you know, E5, he's nice retirement. Nobody's ever going to be able to find him. I mean, with a name like that, basically have no real identity. So Diego just, I mean, everyone's going to be able to notice him out on the beach, just soaking in the sun.
That's right. Diego's like a freaking rock star, man. Because that's the thing is, you know, he gets all the attention because he was really expressive, like, while he was having sex with the female tortoises. Like, he was, like, into it, and he'd, like, ham it up for the researchers and stuff. E5 was just all business. He was like, I'm going in, I'm banging this turtle, and then I'm going back and eating some tall spiky grass or something, you know. But Diego would, like, make a show of it. He was more of a rock star. So I think E5 deserves its due, though. He arguably put in more work.
Yeah. I'm glad both of them saved this species. Do you think they're going to be in harm's way? Like, it seems like it's going to be hard for them once they get back in the nature. I'm not sure that 2,000 turtles is enough to save the species forever. I think there's going to be a lot. There's a bigger threat to them now than there was, you know, back. There was a lot more of them back in the 1600s, and people were using muskets and, like, more primitive weapons and stuff against the turtles. And nowadays, it's like, if Diego goes back, like, I hope there's, like, some wildlife organization that's, like, sitting there with some AK-47s around the dude, because, I mean, they kind of just dropped them off, and after all that hard work, like, you just drop them off in a dark, you know, beach, like, deserted and no protection. I mean, even though, you know, you think the day of the pirates are over, it's not. There's going to be some guy or some poachers, you know, cruising on the beaches maybe tomorrow night. And I hope there's somebody there to save Diego, because I kind of feel like they left him hanging in some ways.
Absolutely. Now I do hope that there's, you know, that there's some good strong conservation efforts to protect the wildlife of the Galapagos. The Galapagos Islands is it is like a world heritage like site. It's like everyone knows how awesome the Galapagos are. I wonder how easy is it to be able to go to the Galapagos Islands? Do you think you or I could just get on, you know, charter a boat and go out there, or like, do you have to, like, are there like a lot more channels to go through? I'm asking you, Ed, because I know you're more of like a traveler, especially, you know, into Europe and South America. Like, could you go to Peru and then just get on a ship to go out there, or what do you think?
The Galapagos, you can just get there. I mean, it's go maybe to Ecuador and find. Go down to the port and have a wad of maybe cost you $3,600 in American cash for round trip over 16 days of just being dropped off alone overnight. It'd take about 12 hours, and then you get dropped off wherever you need to go, because, I mean, it's not... there's not that many people patrolling that area. It's pretty easy to get around people's radar and stuff through there. You just get off, and then they would come back like 8 days later and pick you up, and you just would have to pay half up front. Even if you were stopped, I'm sure your U.S. passport would get you out of trouble.
Wow. Yeah, I'd love to go to the Galapagos someday. You now you said that that tortoises and humans you say that they have no reason to interact, because you know I'm pretty high on the tortoise and the turtle. You know, I think they're like one of the cooler animals out there. I think I rate them pretty high. Would you agree?
Yeah, they're really neat. But if you respect the tortoise, like, you just stay away from it. You just let him do his own thing. Unless he rolls over on his back, you just help him get back on his stomach. But that's the only real reason you would interact with a turtle, is to flip him over to make sure he was on his right side, because you don't want a tortoise to roll down a hill or something and then not be able to get back up. But other than that, you're just disturbing the turtle. He doesn't want to mess around. If you get close to him, he might go back in his shell. Just give him his distance. If you really want to respect the animal, just stay away.
Yeah. Do you think turtles and tortoises are like some of the most likable creatures in the animal kingdom?
I think people underestimate a tortoise's bite. Like, if you put your finger in a tortoise's mouth, you're gonna lose your finger. You know, they might look cute and they might be slow, but it's not like man's best friend.
No, sure. I mean, yeah, cats and dogs, I think, are like at the top of like likability charts, you know. And then you got like farm animals that, you know, give or take, you might. I know my wife, Mary Dackery, doesn't like pigs.
Understandable.
But I mean, you know, you see a cow and you're like, yeah, like I like that cow. It's a cool looking. Horses. Everyone likes horses. Elephants. I think elephants are like a really likable animal.
Yeah, there's a lot of personality there, but tortoises, are they just basking in the sun all the time? Is that their only feeling of enjoyment, is heat?
Yeah, right. They're reptiles, so they're cold-blooded, so you know, they need.
I feel like they, like when you watch them swim though, they're like really enjoying it though. Like they're,
yeah, sea turtles.
They got personality. You know, they might do a couple cartwheels and stuff underwater, show off a little. I mean, they are one of the most highly evolved, you know, animals. Them and alligators and snakes have been around since the Jurassic period.
But you would say that a turtle is more likable than a snake or an alligator, or would you rate them higher? I feel like the danger they pose makes their likability go down a little bit.
Yeah, but like, what do you look for likability? Like, if say you're playing Pokemon, do you want a cute character, or do you want a Charmander an evil character that's powerful and more with jagged teeth? And like, what type of personality do you affiliate with yourself, where when you look at these animals and you are trying to be inspired, do you want to be the alligator of society? Do you want to be the snake of society? Or do you want to be the tortoise? And just think about how animals impact us as humans and like our personality traits. Maybe the likability of like being friends with a turtle is more impactful, but sight of an alligator, that aggression inspires people every day to just like, even think of the football team, like the Gators and stuff. Like, if they were the tortoises, would they go up to that line and smash into the other team as heavy and hard if they were the tortoises? Or when they have that gator logo, are they like really just snapping into the opponents because they just feel that gator within them?
Yeah, I like that. Okay. See, that's just a good call. There really aren't that many that many tortoise or turtle themed teams. Like, there's Maryland. They're the Terrapins. That's like a turtle, but I mean, Maryland doesn't have anywhere near the success that the University of Florida has had.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So Diego, a true hero. Are there any other heroes you can think about? Like, you got to admit, being like a literal father for your species kind of makes you a hero. Like, do you think that you could, if it came down to it, do you think you could repopulate the human species? If it was like you and like 12 girls and like these two other dudes, but one of the dudes like is kind of too old to have sex anymore. Could you do it? Could you take one for the team and dedicate your life to fucking?
That's like a really sad scenario, though, for life. Like, if that ever happened to the world, I guess, like, some other species would have killed everybody except for you and 12 people. Let's hope that never happens.
Well, it doesn't have to be, like, from an outside thing. It could be, like, you know, like, in like 3 years, 4 years, and COVID-25 hits, and then like it just kills everyone except for like you and like, you know, 12 other girls and like two other guys.
I mean, it's not taking one for the team. I mean, it's just what you would do. I mean, it's, you would have to be comforting all those women because they would be just crying all the time, being like, we lost everybody due to COVID. And thinking about a species being completely wiped out like that is like putting that in perspective of everybody on the planet being gone except for you and two dudes and 12 women. That's a weird world. It's almost like easier to imagine like being just dropped off on a different, say, planet with those, that many people. And that might be a more fun lifestyle of if the world was still the same and everything was happy-go-lucky here on Earth and the population was still okay, and then being dropped off on a different planet with three dudes and 12 women, that'd be a fun time. And I think I could repopulate that planet. I mean, I hope our species continues on for a long, long time, but you know, it only took 400 years to completely destroy the giant tortoise, so hopefully we last 400 more years. I don't know. I just don't like thinking about being the last person on Earth. It's not a pleasant thought to me.
Isn't much. Have you, I need a solid soul. Yeah. let's harmonize all around the world.
Dangerous place, and it seems like calamity is around every corner. But if you suffer an injury, you need to make sure that you get paid. Whether it's at a friend's house, in transit, at work, or on public or private property, if you suffer an injury, Ben Tobor, attorney at law, will fight for your money. But don't just take my word for it. Listen to this testimonial of one of the Hammer's clients. How are you injured, sir?
I was at Costco one day, and all of a sudden the nature called. Yelled is more like it. So I hightailed it into the John, and there's some sensitive guy changing his little boy's diaper on one of them baby ironing boards. And don't you know I slipped on pee-pee and broke two vertebrae which had to be fused together?
And what happened after you contacted the Hammer?
I'm in constant pain, but by God, I got me a $53,000 settlement.
So whether it's a car crash, a fall, a shock, or even a slip on some pee-pee at the Costco, if you're hurt, you deserve to be paid. Call the law offices of Ben Tobor at 502-384-8783 and ask for the Hammer.
I am very glad to be able to express my friendly feelings. Go was the American nation. Friendship, which Italy looked at millions of people, from Alaska to Florida, from the Pacific to the Atlantic, gave the United States its very deeply rooted in our heart. Spirit, created by mutual interest, sole contribution, preparation of an even brighter era in the life of both nations. I greet wonderful energy, the American peace, and I see that it's night among you, because of your land, wealth, house, my fellow citizens, who are working to make America great. I salute great American peace. I salute the Italians of America, who united in a single long house and nation.
Hola, esto es Tata.
Hola, compa, ¿qué tal? ¿Cómo estás?
¿Qué pasa, mi capitán? Not much, man. Not much. Is this a hatchet, right? Man, we met back in Valparaiso, man. Like 2013 or something?
Overlooking the water, all the colors on the hills.
Fuck, man. I haven't seen you in forever. What have you been up to?
I've just been, you know, I was on my way all the way up from the bottom of South America back up to the top, you know. Had my hatchet and my harmonica. I'm actually...
Have your shows been canceled because of COVID? Like, what's going on with that? Or you're pretty much just a street performer, right? Like,
yeah,
you don't really play indoors, like, so... Have you been cleaning?
Indoors, there's not really much street action, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of rough. Are you cleaning your harmonica, like, more often now because of COVID, or how are you keeping it clean?
You're not too paranoid
about it or anything? I mean, after all the shit that went down with us down in South America, in the Dina and shit, I mean, I can't believe we overtoppled that whole agency, but, like, you're not scared of a virus after all that shit, so.
Well, I always take precautions, you know, I'm aware, but not scared, so.
Yeah. So you still playing harmonica, right? Like, daily?
I dabble here and there, you know, whenever I'm feeling it.
Yeah. You just been sleeping on beaches or what? Are you just sleeping on beaches still?
What?
Are you still just like kicking it on the beaches? Costa Rica and stuff?
I'm back up in the rolling hills of Kentucky.
What? No way, man. For real? Dude, I'm trying to get the Black Stallions together and we could use a harmonica player. Like, I think that would... There has to be some Elvis song that has harmonica or something. You play a lot of classics, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. I play all kinds of things, but I'm sure there's something by Elvis we could find, no doubt. I've been playing something by Dylan lately.
For real?
It speaks to these times, man. In crazy times, you always look good, Bob. See what he's got to say.
Yeah. What song have you been doing? Is that Blowing in the Wind or something they're talking about? It seems like something like that.
Why don't I just hit you with it and see what you think?
Yeah, because the Black Stallions, seriously, dude, we're looking for a harmonica player. Like, you could just stand right next to me and we'll go back and forth. It'd be sweet.
One condition.
What's that?
I can play the hatchet, too.
At the same time? Oh, my God. Yeah, the crowd would love that. And especially, like, I could definitely get that hatchet mic'd pretty good. All right, yeah, kick it, man. Let's hear it. Beautiful, man. Dude, that's gold. Yeah, that's gold. Yeah. Great. Dude, we have a show April in Nashville. Do you think you could make it?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yep. Yeah. That sounds like a good plan.
Yeah. I think we might be playing at that one. Day. Yeah.
Yeah, here's the plans that far out, but for the Black Stallions, you know, I'll make sure I'm there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's spring. That's what everyone's predicting. Everything opening back up is
right,
maybe
yeah.
Springtime, get through the winter.
I love it. The carnival will kick it off. Spring brings new life.
Yeah, because hopefully that's when our tour kicks off. Dude, we might head down south. You know, we have to do the first world tour before we get to the third world tour. You know what I mean? Where do you think the next destination Hatchet will find himself?
You know, it's hard to say.
You think northern hemisphere, southern, maybe east? I mean, there's travel bands all over, and kind of what we specialize in is really, you know, the State Department kind of shut down borders recently, so it's hard for us to, you know, be too international right now. But I don't know, all this shit down in Beirut is really fucked up. I can't believe the intelligence community really failed us. Like the whole world, you know what I mean? It's like they're always so focused on like the computer hacking side. Like the CIA has just been like hiring people like crazy for computers and shit. And it's like, the whole Beirut thing just shows how sloppy intelligence agencies have like really got. Like the CIA should have known that all that shit was stored there. What if it was fucking uranium, a small deposit of it or something? And like, we didn't know that it was just sitting in the middle of like a downtown city. It's just fucked up, man. Something to think about.
I mean,
like,
people not giving a shit is what it seems like. And those,
well, they're people aren't crossing their T's and dotting their I's in the intelligence community. Like, that's like basics. Like, that is what we were looking out for in Valparaiso. And, like, that's what all the ports should be doing, man. We got to keep track of what's going on in the global markets. You dig?
Yeah. I mean, it's all of our infrastructure is like that. But, I mean, like, America's infrastructure is, like, rated like an F. Like, we could have any bridges and dams and shit collapse at any moment, like, and that's everywhere in the world. And yeah, ports and everything. It's crazy.
Yeah, but it's like, that much explosive material should not be stored in one area in mass populations.
And look, there were people that were, like, sending letters, like, over years, like, to the courts or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, should be with it.
Yeah, so like it just seems like
aware of it, and they still didn't care, you know.
Yeah, like, I just like, how did the U.S. embassy like miss that? Like, shouldn't those guys be smart enough to figure out, like, find those documents that have been going on for years? And if we are going to be preemptive on finding these things. Like, it seems like, I don't know, somebody dropped the ball on this.
We never seem to address things like as humans until it hits us upside the head. Like, so everyone's just complacent in the meantime.
It'd be good if we were ahead of the curve, and I think we could be, and I thought our country was, but obviously, like, the world, just these international organizations just cannot keep up with what's happening. Hopefully we don't see some global shutdown coming here soon.
What do you mean? Like with COVID, just like even more restrictions or something else?
Well, they're cheering for revolution in Lebanon. The French prime minister was there in the streets. It's a very volatile part of the world for thousands of years. People been waiting for revolution in kind of that Middle Eastern region. I think it's kind of been time, and maybe that if that kicks off, because those governments have failed them so much, I mean, it could just keep on going all throughout Europe and shit. Well, like, all restaurants are about to close, you know? Like, in America, like, if you own, like, your own restaurant, like, you're probably not going to make it the next couple years. Like the drive-thrus will, but obviously, like, all American restaurants, like, if you're somebody that owns a restaurant, you're probably not going to be able to make it through the crisis we're going on. Like, a lot of shit's just, like, an illusion right now. Until, like, the government just completely goes broke. The stock market's totally inflated right now on, you know, shit might blow off with China, too. I mean, the whole TikTok thing.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I hear you. All those factors, though, have been there a long time. You know, I don't know. I find it hard to imagine it coming to, like, a global meltdown or war or anything. I mean, though, you know, no one ever thought that was going to happen either, and then France Ferdinand gets shot and fucking everyone goes wild for some reason. So it's like, yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, you never know.
Yeah. A lot of transnational borders are closed globally. I mean, the State Department says they lifted their restrictions, but I don't know what to believe. It's there's not a lot of flights to get out of town.
I mean, yeah, people are obviously trying to normalize it as much as they can. I mean, you know, but you also see, like, you know, as soon as they do, as soon as we open more places, as soon as you open more borders, they're already closing them back down again. You know, it's like the EU a month ago started letting 15 countries back in, and then 2 weeks ago it was already down to 7. You know, so.
Yep, it's a week-to-week thing. It goes back and forth, and it's hard to know who to believe, but things have been going pretty smooth. I can't wait to jam, man.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We'll get together here soon. What, I mean, the gig is in April, but what's going on in the meantime? You guys going to be practicing, getting together, jamming, doing anything informal?
I'll be doing Kentucky Rain and Suspicious Minds coming up next on The Aftermath.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Right on.
Yeah.
With that, I won't tune in.
Sounds good. Later.
All right. Good catching up. We'll jam up there. Be good. Peace.
Political action, democratic cultural revolution, rock and roll music and carnivals set up along the Silk Road in a live entertainment spectacle, the Third World Tour. This extravaganza and revolution of consciousness, from Mongolia to Mecca, Yemen and Somalia, produced by Notion Enterprises, offers amazing entertainment at an affordable price. Showers, camping areas, and restrooms all are provided by the movement. Stay the week while we distribute vaccinations and birth control. Come join us as we change the world together.
Vocalist of the Black Stallions. Be sure to check us out at www.notionentertainment.com October 31st when our full-length compilation of an Elvis tribute is going to be released. Thanks for listening to The Aftermath, and be sure to jam out.
time to worry, especially if it's concerning my health. Oh no, I never worry. I'd much rather do something else. I'm changing my point of view ever since I got there, the sugar blues. Oh, that sugar, it adds a little sweetness into your life. Oh, sugar, won't you add a little sweetness to my life? See, I'm changing my point of view ever since I caught with the sugar blues. Sugar blue. Oh yes, I need me a sugar.